William the Film Star. It turned out that Jimmy Minster, the juvenile film star, was the godson of Miss Appleton, who'd rented the hall, and he was coming to William's village to spend a day with her. Excitement ran high among both children and grown-ups. Mrs. Lane had one of her sweet ideas, and the sweet idea was that her son Hubert and his friends should be the young mayor and corporation of the village and entertain Jimmy Minster to a banquet. As well as being a sweet idea, it would deal the final blow to the pretensions of William Brown and his followers, which Mrs. Lane was as eager to accomplish as Hubert himself. When William heard this, he groaned. Since a recent visit of a royal personage to Hadley, he himself had thought it might be fun to be an alternative mayor, and the outlaws the corporation. It was decided that the youthful film star would attend the banquet in the costume of his latest film success, the cloak and mask and broad-brimmed hat of Little Sir Rupert. The Hubert Laneites were jubilant. William and his supporters tried to look indifferent, but it wasn't easy.
"And to think we had the idea first," exclaimed William, "and it ends with them having Jimmy Minster to a banquet."
The day of Jimmy's visit arrived. A handful of people stood at the hall gates to see him, but he drove quickly by in a closed car, and not much of him could be seen. The majority were waiting till the afternoon, when he was to go from the hall to the Lane's house, dressed in the famous Little Sir Rupert costume. The outlaws' curiosity was too much for them, and they decided to wait by the hedge at a point near the old barn, in order to catch a glimpse of him, if possible, as he passed. A large, luxurious car came into sight.
"That's it," whispered William.
It passed rather slowly, but its occupant was leaning back and the outlaws couldn't see him.
"Wait a minute," said William.
The car was slowing down. It came to a stop. The chauffeur left his seat and set off alone towards the village. As soon as he'd turned the bend, the door opened and a small cloaked figure sprang out and began to run down the road. On sight of the four faces staring at him over the hedge, he stopped.
"I say," he said breathlessly, "where can I get through the hedge?"
For a moment the outlaws were paralysed by amazement. Then William said,
"There's a big hole just along there that we generally use."
The cloaked figure ran down the road, dived nimbly through the hole, cloak, broad-brimmed hat, flowing curls and all, and joined the outlaws.
"I say," he said again in a quick, business-like voice, "where can I go so he won't see me when he comes back with the petrol?"
William, too much taken aback for speech, led the way over the stile and to the old barn. There, Jimmy Minster pulled off hat and wig and looked at them with a grin.
"Won't it be a joke," he said, "when he comes back and finds me not there?"
The outlaws gazed in stunned reverence at this hero of the screen miraculously come to life.
"I wasn't going to that cracked party," went on Jimmy. "Mayor and corporation, indeed. They made me come in these clothes, too, and I've always hated them. Soppy long hair and a hat that comes right down over my eyes. Mayor and Corporation of Boyland greets boy film star. Ha! Makes me sick. A whole lot of them make me sick."
"But what did you do?" stammered William.
Jimmy grinned.
"I emptied nearly all the petrol out of the tank. Left enough in to take us halfway. Now he's gone to the village to try to get some more, and when he comes back he'll find me gone."
He looked enviously at the outlaws.
"What were you going to do when I saw you in the field?"
"We were going to watch you go by," said William, "and then we were going to have a game of Red Indians in the wood."
"Oh, let me come too," pleaded Jimmy earnestly. "Do. I'm jolly good at Red Indians, only I hardly ever get a chance."
His face fell.
"I wish I could get out of these beastly clothes."
"I'll lend you mine," said William suddenly.
"I say, that's awfully decent of you. But what will you do?"
"I'll wear yours."
"But you can't do anything in them," said Jimmy. "They're too tight to run in, and they'd split the moment you began climbing trees. They're awful."
"Oh, well, never mind," said William. "I'll just stay here in them till you come back."
The exchange of clothing was soon effected. Jimmy leapt about, uttering loud war whoops.
"Come on," he said. "Let's go to the woods."
Again he glanced with compunction at William, who was just buttoning up a black velvet jacket with a white lace collar.
"Are you sure you don't mind?" he said.
"Oh, yes," said William. "It's quite all right. You run off and play Red Indians. I'll be all right here. I'll wait till you come back."
With another loud whoop, Jimmy raced across the field, followed by Ginger, Douglas, and Henry. William arranged the wig over his head so that the long curls hid his own hair, put on the broad-brimmed feathered hat, and swaggered round the barn. He was Jimmy Minster. He was little Sir Rupert. He stopped. An idea had struck him. Struck him so forcibly that for a moment he felt quite breathless. Then he picked up the mask, fixed it over his eyes, slung the cloak over his shoulders, and set off quickly across the field to the road. He walked out to the car and got in. As he did so, the figure of the chauffeur appeared in the distance, bent sideways over the weight of a tin of petrol. He went to the back of the car and poured in the petrol.
"Sorry to have kept you so long, Master Jimmy," he said, glancing at the small figure that lolled back in the corner of the car. "Can't think how I came to get so low in petrol."
He started up the car and began to drive quickly towards the Lanes home. 3 minutes later, William, his face almost hidden by wig, hat and cloak collar, was stepping down from the car. There was a sudden clicking of cameras and loud cheers. William didn't feel at all nervous. He was not William Brown masquerading in borrowed plumes. He was not even William Brown scoring off Hubert Lane. He was Jimmy Minster, bored and aloof, acknowledging the plaudits of his admirers. He waved a hand and then walked slowly up to the doorway where Hubert Lane and his councillors stood in their specially made robes of office, ready to welcome him. Hubert's face looked hot and shiny with embarrassment. Mrs. Lane beamed in the background.
"So this is our famous little guest," she said. "Welcome, welcome, dear boy. Shake hands with him nicely, Hubert."
Hubert shook hands with him nicely and muttered, "Welcome, welcome."
"Hubert is our little local mayor, dear," went on Mrs. Lane, addressing William. "It was quite his own idea. It's charming, isn't it? He was made mayor because he's the most popular little boy in the neighbourhood. And these are his councillors. Lead Jimmy in, Hubert. I know you two are going to be great friends. I often think that Hubie would have made a great success on the films."
Still glistening with embarrassment, Hubert led William into the dining room, where the banquet was laid. Trifle, jellies, fruit salad, blancmange, eclairs, chocolate biscuits, piles of iced cake. William's eyes gleamed behind his mask as he looked at it. The local reporter sat at the far end of the table, ready to take down the little guest's every word. William was escorted to the seat of honour by Hubert. The councillors crowded round.
"Now, won't you take off your hat and cape and mask, dear?" cooed Mrs. Lane.
William made a vehement gesture of dissent.
"Perhaps you're right, dear," said Mrs. Lane with a sigh. "It wouldn't be little Sir Rupert without them. Oh, what a lovely picture that was. Were you nervous when you were doing it, dear?"
William informed her that he wasn't. He adopted a deep, husky voice, explaining that he was just recovering from a bad sore throat. The councillors took their places at the table, gaping reverently at William. A selection of Hubert's aunts hovered in the distance.
"He doesn't look a bit like he does on the screen," said one.
"They never do," said another.
"Oh, but I think he does," said a third.
All that could be seen of William was his mouth. The mouth, however, was kept fully occupied. Trifle, jelly, blancmange disappeared from his plate by magic.
"He's got quite a good appetite, hasn't he?" murmured one of the aunts.
The shyness of the Hubert Lanites was breaking down.
"Jimmy," said Hubert, his mouth full of iced cake, "there's a boy here called William Brown, and he copied us, having a mayor and corporation."
William restrained himself with difficulty at this point.
"And his old mayor and corporation would have liked to have you for a banquet, and it's jolly snooks for them."
He chuckled fatly, and the other Hubert Lanites chuckled fatly with him. William, with a great effort, kept his fists to himself.
"I bet they're out there in the garden now, hiding and trying to look in. I say, do go and stand in the window and show 'em you're here. I bet that'll make 'em mad as mad."
William went to the window and waved his hand airily. Rather to his astonishment, the outlaws actually were there, clustered round the gate, laughing and breathless. With them was Jimmy Minster, still dressed in William's old tweeds, his face streaked with mud, his hair standing on end. They'd returned to the barn, found William gone, guessed his exploit, and come to reconnoitre. They were all in a state of high glee over the discovery, especially Jimmy, who hung over the gate and shouted, "Good old William!" at the top of his resonant voice. The Hubert Lanites stared at them from the window. "William Brown's not there," announced Bertie Franks.
"No, he daren't show his face." "Yah!" shouted Hubert through the glass. "Yah! Who's having Jimmy Minster to a banquet?"
The real Jimmy Minster put out his tongue and distorted his features into a challenging grimace.
"There's another boy with them," said Mrs. Lane. "A very rough-looking boy. I'll go and send them away."
She went down the path. Ginger and Douglas and Henry fled, but Jimmy Minster still hung over the gate, grinning at her impudently.
"Go away, little boy," she said severely.
Jimmy adopted a high-pitched, squeaky voice.
"Want to see Jimmy Minster?"
he squealed.
"Of course you can't see Jimmy Minster. I never heard such impertinence. Let me tell you that Jimmy Minster wouldn't even look at a dirty little ragamuffin like you. Go away at once."
Jimmy ran off chuckling to join Ginger, Douglas and Henry. Meanwhile, William was beginning to think it was time that the proceedings came to an end. He'd enjoyed the banquet. He'd collected many inane remarks of Hubert's that would come in as useful weapons in time to come, and he'd so far evaded discovery.
"I think I'd better be going now,"
he said in his hoarse voice.
"I gotta be back early."
"Oh, but dear,"
protested Mrs. Lane, "you must wait till the car comes. Besides, we've got a little surprise for you. Hubert, dear." Hubert rose, took up a paper parcel, and handed it to William with a low bow. William opened the parcel. It was a small model aeroplane, such as he'd always longed to possess. So pleased was he that he almost forgot to use the new husky voice in expressing his thanks.
"Come and show it at the window," said Hubert. "I bet old William Brown's hiding about somewhere. He's been wanting an aeroplane like this for ever so long."
Hubert sniggered maliciously.
"Go on, hold it up and let him see it, if he's hiding anywhere around. I bet he is. He was as sick as we had you to a banquet, and not him. Go on, wave it round."
William obeyed, and Hubert danced an ungraceful war dance beside him.
"Yah, old William Brown."
The other councillors took up the cry.
"Yah, old William Brown. Who's having Jimmy Minster to a banquet? Who's got an aeroplane like the one you wanted and couldn't get? Yah, boo."
Mrs. Lane smiled fondly in the background.
"And now, Jimmy dear," she said, "you'll take off the hat and mask and cloak, won't you, and let us see the real Jimmy?"
They all cheered and crowded round him. William looked round desperately for escape. To his relief, he saw Miss Appleton's car drawing up at the door.
No, he said with husky urgency. "No, I must go now. Tell you what, I'll do it when I'm in the car just at the gate, shall I? That'll be better. You see," he added mysteriously, "I must stay like I am till I'm right out of the house."
"Professional etiquette, I expect," said the first aunt. "A sense of the dramatic," explained the second. "Very odd," said the third. But William didn't stay to argue. As he got in, he whispered a word to the chauffeur. The car drew out of the gate and stopped in the road. Mayor, corporation, aunts and Mrs. Lane stood watching expectantly. Little Sir Rupert leaned out of the window of the car. He whipped off hat, mask, cloak and wig. The grinning, homely features of William Brown were revealed.
Ah!
With howls of rage, the Hubert Lanites rushed forward, but it was too late. The car had started and was already on its way. The Hubert Lanites pursued it ineffectually down the road, shouting angrily, tripping over their robes of office in their haste. William continued to hang out of the window. He waved the aeroplane triumphantly. At the hole in the hedge, William stopped the car and made his way across the fields to the old barn where Jimmy and the outlaws awaited him.
"Well, I've had a jolly good time," said Jimmy as they changed clothes. "I don't know about you."
An ecstatic look came over William's face.
"Yes, I have," he said simply. "A jolly good time. I reckon it was just like being in a film."